To Transcend Love by Pai, read by Hananobira. Ritsuka hasn't forgotten Yoji's comment that he's not using Soulby correctly. However, it's something that's hard to remember when your supposedly dead brother's writing messages on walls to you with the blood from someone else's eyeballs. Ritsuka has never been good with dealing with things like this. Ritsuka thinks he hasn't been good with dealing with a lot. Ritsuka doesn't deal. He is. Ritsuka, at least this one, Ritsuka doesn't know about the old one, is a master of acceptance. Ritsuka bears the brunt of his mother's fear and anger. Ritsuka doesn't scream and accepts her biting nails, smashed dishes, and the occasional stabbing fork with a cautious calm. Ritsuka's life has long since stopped being surreal. Ritsuka accepted Soulby, like he accepts everything about his brother. Ritsuka accepted good grades, no friends, and therapy every week. Ritsuka greets the world by letting it roll over him. He has his moral code. If nobody's getting hurt, really hurt, it's okay. Ritsuka will stand up for his friends. He will defend his brother's memory, but he has never learned to give orders. Never learned to ask for things for himself.
If the master is confused, it's the dog that gets misled, Yoji had said.
Ritsuka doesn't know what he wants, except that he doesn't want people to get hurt. And he wants to know what happened to his brother. Soulby's not a dog, and Soulby doesn't obey. He turns his phone off, and like every other adult, he's unreliable. Like everyone but Seimei. But Soulby is better than that as well. Soulby, who makes him eat nutritious food, which is still tasty. Soulby, who talks kindly with Ritsuka's friends and follows Ritsuka around. Soulby, who laid his head on Ritsuka's bound legs and asked, could they please leave? Soulby never asks for anything. Ritsuka said no. Ritsuka wonders if that makes him a bad sacrifice. The one time he knew what he wanted, he was too self-involved to see beyond his own obsession. Soulby was afraid, and now Ritsuka knows why. Seimei has always known what he wants. Seimei has always controlled everything. Seimei structured Ritsuka's world as long as he could remember. That is, in essence, what he told Seven. It was to Seimei's voice and smile that Ritsuka awoke, and to the sound of Seimei's fingers tapping on the keys that he fell asleep. Seimei fed him, clothed him, bathed him. His world began and ended with Seimei, and the world outside that was a scary one, where his mother raved and therapists and teachers looked concerned. And now Seimei's giving him a choice. Ritsuka never had to choose for himself before. It feels like a physical pain, tight in his chest. Ritsuka has always loved Seimei, but Seimei asks Ritsuka to cease being Ritsuka. Ritsuka's not commanding, but he's not like Soulby either. Ritsuka thinks maybe one day, if Seimei hadn't died, Ritsuka might have been Soulby. Soulby, who doesn't find his own pain strange, in the same way Ritsuka has come to accept the world. Soulby, for whom Seimei's word is law. Ritsuka wonders if he should have tried harder. Soulby has learned what he thinks. Kia said so. Soulby has learned to bow to a gentle touch. Soulby has learned not to kill, not to hurt. Soulby has learned, but not enough. Ritsuka hasn't known himself. Ritsuka cannot choose Seimei over everything. Seimei says, Ritsuka is the only person alive that is exactly the same as I am. Ritsuka tries not to listen, not to be caught in the trap of Seimei's voice. Ritsuka is not Seimei. He can never be Seimei. Ritsuka is Ritsuka, and Soulby is Soulby, and maybe that faith will be enough. I love you, Ritsuka says, because it's true, and I still forgive you, because he does. He has always accepted Seimei. But I belong to myself. His voice carries the note of a triumphant spell. Litzka may not know what he wants, but he does know who he is. Maybe that surety is what matters. Sobi stands behind him, and Litzka knows for an instant that they've won. I forgive you, but I'm still mad at you for what you've done. Then the world comes crashing down in a shatter of glass. Sobi's face is wrenched, and Litzka feels that answering twist in his own heart. Seimei's word is still absolute law. But then they are alone and safe. The zeros quiver in the background, and Litzka knows, looking at Sobi, he has his work cut out for him. They leave the school in the wreck it is, blood on the walls, smashed windows, cut power and scattered students. Litzka sees the look Yoji gives him as they tow a blank and unresisting Sobi behind them. Litzka doesn't know what to do, and his concern makes him snap. Sobi's repetitive, quiet, self-flagellating, "No," pisses Litzka off. He can't help snapping. Why are you using such vile words to describe yourself? Litzka doesn't know how to fix this, but he knows that he will try. He takes a deep breath to calm himself. He first tries being normal. Get undressed. I'm really exhausted, so hurry up, okay? The words are perhaps overly harsh, but they're direct and hard to misinterpret. Litzka hopes Sobi will hear the concern in his voice. Litzka only really orders Sobi around when Sobi's hurting himself. Just looking at Sobi's face, it's clear Sobi's hurting himself. Litzka has always known the type of hurt that only shows on someone's face is always the worst. That is the type of hurt that causes Yuiko to speak in third person. It's the type of hurt that makes his mother violent. And perhaps it's the type of hurt that Litzka and Sobi both carry like a house, decorated by the past, deeply buried words and sounds, the smell of gasoline, and the exact shade of death in a pinned butterfly. Litzka shifts over for Sobi to slide in next to him in the room's single bed. Sobi wears only his long shirt and keeps a careful distance around himself. Litzka knows he's faking sleep. After a few minutes, Litzka sighs. The night has been long already, but there are still several hours till morning. Besides, no one will expect them to be up early. Litzka sits up and shifts. Sobi's eyes open, but he stays still and compliant while Litzka situates himself, sitting close beside his head. Litzka begins running his hands through Sobi's hair. Yuiko says her mother soothes her to sleep, fingers combing her hair when there are thunderstorms. Litzka wonders if anyone ever stroked Sobi's forehead into sleep. After a few moments, Sobi begins to lean into the touch. It's not the truth, Litzka says, and his voice is quiet but firm. Sobi doesn't answer. He doesn't move, and he doesn't speak, but he doesn't withdraw either. You're not a traitor. You're still doing what he told you. Litzka feels like he's feeling his way in the dark. Sobi, he gave you to me. You can't take back a gift. Litzka speaks with all the surety of a child. Presents aren't something you can take away. That's rude and cruel. Seimei has never been cruel to Litzka. Litzka refuses to believe it. Litzka forgets the smell of gasoline. He forgets the way Seimei's hands always held him just a little too hard. Seimei forces him to make the hard choices. That isn't cruelty. Litzka is Litzka's, and no one else's. Or maybe Litzka can be something to Sobi. No, Litzka knows he is something to Sobi. Seimei loves me, Litzka says with conviction. Seimei says it, and it is perhaps the only true thing he's ever said. Maybe, if it's all lies, Litzka can believe in that. He can't take back a gift. Sobi, you are a gift. Litzka leans over. The long hair at the side of his face falls forward, almost touching Sobi. Sobi doesn't meet his eyes. Sobi, you are my fighter, Nitzka tries again. It's probably not the right thing to say. All the things Sobi thinks of being a fighter, Kyo's words, Sobi is a blank form, Solby's almost playful comments to Yoji. You could sit outside for 1,000 years and he still wouldn't talk to you. Nitzka hadn't thought of it at the time, beyond a brief awareness that Yoji was now locked out of the room. But that was how Sobi saw himself? Nitzka has been trying so hard, trying not to let Sobi fight alone, for it to be the two of them. It's difficult because Sobi is difficult and confusing. But Nitzka thinks he might be coming to understand. Not why, perhaps, but how. Yoji had said, "You don't know how to use Sobi at all. Sobi and Seimei were famous. Sobi and Nitzka are always on the brink of falling apart. But Nitzka isn't Seimei, and there has to be another way. Nitzka knows Sobi. Sobi is very strong, but it's untrue that he has no sense of self. Nitzka understands. It's not that Sobi doesn't know himself. Sobi knows himself better than anyone, and chooses to let go. Sobi chooses to put Seimei's every word first. Sobi has been trained to put Seimei's every word before himself. But when it counts, Sobi has held himself against what Seimei is." Sobi said, "Don't answer him, Nitzka." And it was then that Nitzka had felt the claw-like grip Seimei had on his arms. Sobi is not a thing. Nitzka is not a thing. Nitzka's hand stills as he realizes Sobi doesn't need to learn or unlearn anything. Sobi is so strong already. Sobi just needs to be believed. "Sobi, I believe in you. You believed in Seimei, but now I need you to listen to me." Nitzka sees the tension in Sobi's face. Sobi is waiting, wanting to hear. Nitzka takes a deep breath. "Seimei is lying. I know Seimei is lying, and I know you lied. I forgive you, and I forgive Seimei. But I don't forgive Seimei for what he did to you. You are worth more than that." Nitzka feels the words he said to Yuiko. "Is that an order?" Sobi's voice is a rasp. Nitzka can hear the weight of guilt and a deep emotional desire. "No," Nitzka says. But before Sobi can slip away, he has Sobi's face held firm between his hands. "It's not an order because I don't need to order you. I will never tell you anything but the truth. I know you will believe me, Sobi. You don't need an order to do what I say." Sobi feels like he's vibrating under Aditska's fingers. "I can tell you what to do, and you can choose to ask why. I will explain, and I will be right. Seimei's word might be law, but my word is truth, and the truth will always win in the end." Aditska's voice is triumphant, and he feels the moment Sobi starts to relax. The stillness that seeps into his body is astounding, like watching years of tension sliding off. Sobi relaxes into the bed, his cheek turning to rest against Nitzka's leg. Nitzka resumes petting his hair, riding a giddy feeling of elation. Nitzka has Sobi in a way Seimei never will. Seimei never understood, but Nitzka can. Nitzka is Sobi. They are the same name. Maybe not loveless or beloved. Maybe something that transcends love. Sobi will never have to fight alone, and neither will Nitzka. They can take Seimei. Nitzka knows it in his core. Seimei relies too much on control. Nitzka and Sobi know how to accept, and that which bends will not break. Seimei has never bent once in his life. Solby's eyes watch him as Nitzka slides down the bed, holding up the covers so he can wriggle down inside. "Sleep," Nitzka whispers. Sobi closes his eyes. Nitzka knows the night won't stretch on forever. Inevitably, the sun will soon rise. Nitzka leans up just slightly and places a light kiss on Sobi's lips. Sobi doesn't stir, his breathing slow and even in sleep. Nitzka curls close in beside him. Sobi's heat and breath guide him to sleep. The end.